Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 255. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and with me on the line this week, I'm very happy to have Molly Galbraith. I hope I got your name correct.
Well, it's very close. We say Galbraith, but I mean, I'm from the South, so I think it's actually supposed to be like Galbraith, so I think I say it wrong, so whatever is totally fine.
I'm just going to say Molly. Hey, Molly, what's up?
Molly G, Malls. I have some friends that call me Moles. There's all kinds of nicknames out there. So whatever you want to call me, I'll probably answer to, because I've probably heard it. So
perfect. Well, we got you obviously on for you know, big episode number 255, and you're part of the hurricane of interviews that I'm going to be doing over the next couple weeks. And you know, I just need to talk to the audience for a second. I know I've been a little bit sporadic with the episodes these last couple months. That's the way things, you know, kind of happen to be, you know, with work and life and other things. But we're going to keep it going with a ton of interviews. And Molly, it's a huge pleasure to get you on the show and to, you know, we're going to really get into it in a couple seconds.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm definitely a fan of the show. And so I think that was evidenced by the fact that when you sent me a message, I responded in less than 60 seconds, which was a little embarrassing. I was kind of like, you know, like answering on the first ring when somebody calls. I was trying not to be too eager, but I couldn't help myself. Yes, yes, yes. I want to be on the FitCast. Yes.
So, well, at least you don't overthink it. Like when I do stuff like that, or if I get like an email where I'm like really excited, or if I get a thing on Facebook, I make sure not to like, I like wait 3 minutes just to make sure it's not like, man, this guy's, you know, looking at Facebook. No, I just happen to open it up, or I just happen to be on, you know, Twitter on my phone or something. But
yes. No, I know. Well, that's what happened. I got the Twitter alert on my phone, and it was like Kevin Larrabee, and I was like, okay. You know, and I'm used to acting like a nerdy loser, and like, you know, so it's not a big deal. I'm used to embarrassing myself a little bit, so I figured I'd just roll with it, because at least it was for a good cause this time. So
no, it works. And again, it was perfect situation. We were able to get together within 24 hours, and here we are. But we got a bunch of questions from. Obviously, we should kind of preface this talking a little bit about who you are and, your history is being a figure competitor, and you've talked a little bit about, you know, doing some powerlifting type stuff. So give people kind of a little bit of background on what you do. And obviously now you're doing some really great stuff with boot camps as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll try to give you the short story. Like I was telling you before the show started, I'm a bit long-winded, so I'll try to keep it short. I was a relatively athletic kid, I guess. I was a gymnast, which at about 6 feet tall doesn't make much sense, usually surprises people. But I was a competitive gymnast for 5 years, did some cheerleading after that, went to college, gained a ton of weight, got really out of shape, and around 2004 decided I wanted to look better and feel better. So started working out, started dating a guy who was a trainer. Luckily, he introduced me to sites like T-Nation, Elite FTS, introduced me to lots of great coaches. So stumbled upon that in 2004, absolutely fell in love with anything and everything fitness related. I was in college at the time. Like I mentioned, I was getting my undergrad in finance and marketing. Did not want to switch my major because I was almost done, and then ended up going on to get my MBA. So actually my background is in business, but my passion has been fitness and nutrition and health for about 9 years. So over the last 9 years, I've dabbled in figure a little bit. I did a figure competition in 2006, one in 2007, and one in 2008. I've dabbled in powerlifting. A lot of people associate me with powerlifting, but I've only competed twice, and once was in 2005 in a push-pull meet, and then once was in 2009. So I've, like I said, dabbled in both of those things. Have you know, a little bit of experience. I love training for strength, and I don't think I'll ever do figure again. Which if we get into kind of my health history and stuff, you'll find out why, but I would definitely love to do powerlifting again at some point. So, I've spent the last 3 years kind of building my gym and building my business. So that's been my main focus and concentration, but I would definitely love when things get settled with the gym, I would love to compete in powerlifting again. So that's kind of my background.
You know, it always seems with the you know, tons of people that I've talked to, it seems like everyone kind of goes through the, you know, the people that do the figure competing, it gets tiring really quickly. And it seems like just, you know, kind of training for strength just becomes a lot more fun.
Absolutely. And, you know, training for strength for me is something that you can do forever. And training for figure, I mean, it just really beat the hell out of my body. I'll be honest. I did a competition in 2006, one in 2007. And after my competition in 2008, I struggled a lot. You know, between each competition, my body rebounded really badly. And it was obvious that it didn't like what I was putting it through. But it's, you know, that's kind of like you said, everyone goes through this figure competition thing. For some reason, at some point when you get into fitness, like everyone or most females have this goal of doing figure or bikini. You know, they see that body and they want to get really lean, and it seems kind of like the holy grail of fitness. And so everybody wants to do it. But like I said, it was really obvious my body did not like it at all. And after my last competition in 2008, my body rebounded. And even though I was doing, you know, my prep was intelligently done, I came off of my prep intelligently, my body just like totally backfired. And I remember looking in the mirror one time and just being like, whose body is this? You know, and it was so devastating because you've been so lean and you've, you know, been at what you feel like looks like the peak of physical, you know, your physical perfection or whatever. And then you go back to reality and you realize you can't look that way forever. And then, you know, the comments you get from people, it's funny being in the industry, people feel like they can comment on your body. You know, people would be like, oh, wow, did you stop working out? Or like, you know, like they kind of look at you and look really surprised. They don't realize, you know, that you're going to put 10 to 15 pounds back on pretty quickly. And so, about 5 or 6 months after that competition, I was 24 years old and I could hardly get up off the couch, to go to the bathroom or to go to the kitchen to get a glass of water. And I went to the doctor and found out that I have Hashimoto's, which is autoimmune hypothyroidism. I have PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome, and I have adrenal dysfunction. I know there's kind of a lot of controversy about adrenal fatigue and adrenals, and my doctor calls it adrenal dysfunction and says there's a feedback loop issue between the adrenals and the brain. Either way, I felt like complete garbage, and I looked like garbage, and yeah, so That was my last experience with figure. I think that last show in 2008 was the straw that broke the camel's back, and I've been kind of working to get healthy ever since.
You mentioned a couple things there. I think first off, the question that I would have for you is, do you think kind of that experience is similar to what a lot of, you know, I think it's men and women that kind of go through this where they, you know, diet super hard, you know, they get that, you know, get ready for that vacation or whatever, or they get that New Year's resolution 30, 45 days in, then they kind of bounce back. Do you think it's kind of a similar thing? Obviously, yours was kind of at a more extreme level where you had that whole trifecta of things going on.
Yeah. You know, I think with a lot of people, if they set a short-term goal like that, like a vacation or, you know, looking good for a wedding, they're not making lifestyle changes. And so I think in general, they rebound because they can't stick with it. I think for people doing something more extreme, they rebound because their body rebels. You know, I have women that come to me, they're like, I have lost all this weight, you know, over the last year, I've lost a ton of weight, you know, this is what I'm eating, this is what I'm doing, and the scale hasn't budged in 3 months, or the scale's been climbing, or, you know, my clothes aren't fitting. And it's because they're not eating enough and they're over-exercising and they never give their body that break. They don't realize that they can't do that forever. And so, you know, our body's always looking for homeostasis. So if you're eating, you know, 2000 calories and then 1800 and then 15 and then 1200, then you get down to, you know, you want to keep losing, and you get your calories down to, you know, 900, 1000, 1100 calories a day and stay there for a long time. I mean, eventually, and then you're doing all this cardio and you're working out, you know, your body's going to become really efficient and it's going to start maintaining or gaining fat at that low, you know, that low calorie level because it's trying to survive. So I think there's two camps. I think there's the one camp that has the very, you know, short-sighted, you know, 6 weeks to a new me, have to get ready for vacation and never, you know, and they go too hard too quickly and don't make lifestyle changes that they can stick with. And then I think there's the camp that really pushes themselves way too hard and kind of has that rebellion from their body where their body's just like, I'm not doing this anymore because, you know, like I said, it's just trying to survive. So I think, I see both, definitely. It's the one group that's, you know, only dedicated for a short term, and then the other group who's so dedicated that they have blinders on and kind of dig themselves into a hole. So,
what kind of training modifications did you have to make coming back from that? What was kind of like the process getting back, quote unquote into shape or whatnot?
Right. Getting my body back. Well, yeah. So I did that show in 2008, then was struggling with my body image and, thought to myself, if I have an aesthetic goal, I'm just going to kill myself. Like my body is so out of whack right now. And I feel so horribly about myself, that I need a performance goal. So that's when I decided to do another powerlifting meet. So despite the fatigue and despite feeling kind of crummy, I was actually able to prepare for a powerlifting meet, in 2009. And so, I did that, and I think, my business partner and kind of training mentor, Jim Laird, is just, one of the greatest coaches I've ever worked with. I'm so blessed to work, to learn from him and work with him. And he got myself and three other ladies ready for that meet. And we used kind of a Jim Windler 5-3-1 type programming. It was a little bit modified for us, but, I was lifting heavy 3 to 4 days a week. I had a day that started off with squat, one with bench, one with deadlift. And instead of overhead press, we did a heavy incline bench press. So we did that kind of programming. He said, cause I was wanting to go in the gym and do 7 or 8 different things every time I was in there. And he said, get really strong, pick a few solid exercises and get really, really strong at them. And so, of course, like I said, squat, bench, deadlift, press. I think my accessory work, I had back extensions, I had step-ups, I had push-ups, I had chins, just your really basic stuff. One day a week, I was allowed to do croc rows. Are you familiar with croc rows?
I've seen him on T Nation.
Yeah, you've seen him on T Nation. So Matt Krochuleski, I'm going to butcher his last name. Sorry, Matt. But I'd stumbled upon them. It's a row. It's a one-arm row with a kind of a lot of body English. You're really, moving, using your whole body to lift the weight. And so I started out doing those. And I think the first time I did them, I used like a 50-pound dumbbell and got it like 27 or 28. And by the end of about 6 to 7 weeks, I was using a 100-pound dumbbell for 18. So that's actually one of my most viewed YouTube videos.
Holy shit.
Sorry,
I was trying to hold that back, but I was...
You can. Just do it. Do it. 100-pound croc row for 18. I had wrist straps on. Once I got to about 70-pound dumbbells, I needed to use straps. But yeah, and I ended up getting the 110s for 12 at some point, but that video has been lost somewhere in space. But yeah, so... And the cool thing was I have a massage therapist that I see very regularly, and I hadn't seen her in about 3 weeks, 4 weeks from the time I started my croc rows to, at that point, after about 3 to 4 weeks, I was at about 80 pounds for 22, I think. And she was sorry about that. She goes, "What the hell have you been doing for your back?" And I was like, "What do you?" And she was like, "Your back." She said, "I've never seen so much density and thickness and width, like change in someone's back in such a short amount of time." And so people can poo-poo the croc rows all they want, or make fun of croc for having his own row variation, whatever. But they work. So they worked for me. So anyway, I was doing Windler's 5-3-1, got ready for that powerlifting meet. I had a decent meet. I squatted 237, which was okay. I benched 148, which was fine. And then I deadlifted 341, which was really cool. I was really excited about that. And, I did that meet in 2009 and then, wanted to keep powerlifting, but realized that there were maybe some basics that I had missed out on. I only trained with Jim, like specifically for that meet. And so, I didn't have a ton of guidance before that. And so I decided to go see Mike Robertson up in Indianapolis. I'm sure you're familiar with Mike. Mm-hmm. Mike and Bill Hartman at iFast, and thought that I would kind of get back to the basics and see what they could help me with. And Mike said that I basically just pulled 341 pounds with my quads and my low back. So he's like, if we can build you a core, get you some glutes and hamstrings, he's like, you'll be a monster. And I've been working actually with Mike ever since. So about 3 years of doing that. So I told you I'm a talker. See, we might only get through like two questions
today. No, that's fine. So I think one of the cool things that you brought up was, you know, just becoming really, and I was even talking with some of our staff at NBSC the other day about this. You know, I've been able to put on a ton of muscle just being able to go into the gym and, like, whether you want to call it, you know, the 5-3-1 setup, I mostly just like adopted, you know, been talking with like Ben Bruno and mm-hmm. some of our staff, and really just go in and do three things and just do a shit ton of reps and not really be very scientific about it. I just kind of go in, or even like at home today, just knock out like 8-10 sets of chin-ups, just, mm-hmm. you know, just not really go nuts. I'm not like sweating like crazy. I'm really just getting in the work and getting in the volume. Yeah. And it's just like, it's really, you know, somewhat you're going to be sore, but it's not super hard to recover from. And I think that some people who are going into the gym, they're not looking for any kind of really athletic benefits out of what they're doing in there. You know, you can get a lot out of just becoming a master at a couple lifts instead of just going in and, you know, doing two sets of this and three sets of that and two sets of, you know, something else, and then three sets of core and then two sets of like you know, bicep curls. Like, you can just kind of be really, really good at a couple things and just pick those major multi-joint exercises, and you're going to be, you know, kicking ass.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people get really wrapped up in exactly, you know, exactly what they're supposed to be doing. We tell, you know, when we're doing our group classes and stuff, we'll say, okay, guys, you know, 3 to 4 sets of 8 to 12 exercise, you know, 8 to 12 reps on this. And they're like, but should I do 8 or should I do 12? I'm like, I don't know. How do you feel? Like, you know, and they're like, but, and I'm like, it really doesn't matter in the grand, you know, in the grand scheme of things. It doesn't matter that much. And people, you know, get in their own heads a lot. And it's like, dude, pick good exercises, do them with a certain level of intensity, an appropriate level of intensity, and with enough volume, and you'll get results. And I think it's easy for people in the industry to say that, because we have kind of what I call the filter, where we can see someone who has a really detailed scientific program and understand why it's so specific. You know, use 65% with a 40-second rest. You know,
yeah.
If you've ever read Chad Wesley Smith's stuff on Juggernaut, I mean, he's very specific. 10 sets of 3 with, you know, X percent and 45 seconds rest. And then the next week is, you know, 8 sets of 5 with 45 seconds. You know, it's very specific. And there's a time and a place for that. And then there's a time and a place just to go in and lift some effing weights, you know. And it's like, so being in the industry, we have the filter, and we can know when which type of training is appropriate. But yeah, I totally agree. Go in, you know, pick a couple things, get really, really good at them, and, you know, do them consistently. And for most people, it'll get you where you want to be. So
yeah, it's impossible to not get stronger by increasing the weight every couple of weeks. Like, it's just, yeah. You know, just progress a little bit every single time you go in, and you're mm-hmm. going to be good to go. So yeah. We will start getting to the questions. I selfishly wrote half the questions because you know, we'll get to some listener stuff, but I'm selfish. And like Lee Peel said,
Lee already called you out on that. Yeah. So I was prepared for it.
And again, I think some of these questions are going to be broad spectrum. They're going to hit on a lot of the questions that we got through Facebook and Twitter. And thank you for finally coming out and asking questions. I appreciate everyone who submitted stuff.
I know, it made me feel like no one wanted to hear anything from me.
Oh, no, end up getting a ton of stuff, but it's the same thing. Like, with any guests that we have on there, you always got to kind of
I like contacted my whole family. Was like, hey, act like I'm interesting and you want to hear things from me. So that worked. They pulled through and contacted you. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it all worked out. So in general, you know, we talked a little bit about how you set up your training and how you've been training. But in general, how do you like to approach programming and nutrition for your clients, be it like online or in person for you know, general fitness goals, that whole, you know, that whole
look good, feel good.
Yeah. Look good naked, you know, not be in pain, you know, when I'm sitting at the desk kind of thing.
Absolutely. Well, I will say I'm not a huge fan of programming training for online clients because I'm so anal about the way they do things, you know, coming from that kind of Mike Robertson, Bill Hartman school of thought. Like I want to assess them, or I want, and actually Jim, my business partner, does most of the assessments or pretty much all the assessments at our gym. But, you know, I want to see how they move because I don't want to prescribe them a split squat if it's not, you know, if it's not appropriate for them. So I don't love training for online clients. If they can come in person like once or twice a month and work with me, then I'm okay doing that. So I'll talk mostly about the programming for training for in-person clients. Like I said, at my gym, I'm not sure if I said this on when we were recording or not, but we do private, semi-private, and group personal training. I do mostly group stuff. I teach about 18 classes a week. And when I say classes, you know, we call them boot camp, but they're really group personal training. And the cool part about the classes is that I work with usually about 10 to 25 people at any given time. So even though it's only 18 hours, I'm getting to see a lot of bodies. You know, I'm getting to watch a lot of different people move, see how they squat, see how they hinge, see how they push and pull. And so it's really, really, you know, kind of sped up my learning curve for sure. Jim, my business partner, does all the programming for the classes, and we have classes 6 days a week. They're Monday, Tuesday is the same, Wednesday, Thursday is the same, Friday, Saturday is the same. And the way we generally do it is Monday, Tuesday is a strength-based day. Wednesday, Thursday is generally a skill-based, so we'll take a little more time working on some skill stuff, and then we'll do some hard conditioning. And then on Friday, Saturday, it is we use strength-based exercises in a circuit. So they're still getting some conditioning, but they're doing a lot of strength-based stuff. So that's kind of how we program. People get here early and do some foam rolling and some you know, soft tissue work, lacrosse ball, foam roll, stick, Theracane, whatever. We think that's really important to keep, you know, keep tissue quality and it, you know, helps keep people healthy and keep them out of pain. We do breathing. We're really big on diaphragmatic breathing, which I've been getting a lot of questions about lately. It's so important. It's, you know, people don't know how to breathe anymore, and it affects everything from how they move to how they feel to how they train. You know, Bill Hartman says posture equals respiration and respiration equals posture, and then posture, of course, affects movement. So we do some breathing that takes about 2 or 3 minutes and has been an integral part of our program. Take them through a dynamic warm-up. Then we might go, you know, depending on the day, go straight into some strength work. And then we might possibly finish with some conditioning. So we try to hit the whole gamut of everything in all of our classes. And when I do write online programs for people, that's exactly how I program for them. They do soft tissue stuff. They breathe. They do a warm up. If they do some skill work, then you know, then they might put that in there. They might do some power movements. I don't work with a ton of athletes. You know, I don't do a ton with Olympic lifts or anything, just because that's not my population. But they always do strength training, heavy strength training, progressive strength training, big movements. We always try to get in, you know, throughout the week. They're going to be hinging, they're going to be squatting, they're going to be rowing, they're going to be pressing, they're going to be resisting movement with their core, they're going to be doing some kind of split stance or single leg movement. And we always try to do more for the upper back, more for the anterior core, and more for the glutes and hamstrings than we do the opposite muscle. So way more pulling than pressing, more stuff for the anterior core than the low back, and more stuff for the glutes and hamstrings than the quads. So that's kind of our basic template, and go from there, you know, make tweaks as necessary based on people's goals and their ability level.
So a lot, definitely following along the lines of undoing current day society, you know, type sitting down and, you know.
Absolutely. Most people that walk in our door, especially women, they have this, you know, severe anterior pelvic tilt, which I talk a lot about. You know, they're just hanging on their low back. Like, we look at people, we're like, you do everything with your spinal erectors. You brush your teeth, you pay your bills, you drive your car, you know. And women.
How much of that is like deprogramming just women to, because, you know, a lot of the stuff that, you know, talking about in terms of training and things like that, I've heard in the past that, and I've kind of seen it, that some women just kind of like are programmed to kind of like almost stick their hips out a little bit. Obviously, it's part of it is gender based.
Right.
In terms of their structure. But do you think some of that is just kind of like deprogramming them to you know, walk differently?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think obviously it's funny. We have a joke, the anterior pelvic tilt. It looks good, but it doesn't.
Well, exactly,
it's not
yeah.
good for you, you know. So that's kind of the thing. You know, we're kind of, you know, at the age when you start noticing boys and they start noticing you, you know, and especially in this culture of butts. I mean, I think, you know, every decade or so I've read kind of had their body part, you know, and
we're in the decade of butts.
We are in the decade of the booty, I think. You know, I mean, think about in the you know, 2000-ish era, it was Britney Spears, it was the abs, you know, I'm sure in the 80s and 90s, it was the boobs, it was the implants, you know. And I would say now it's definitely the ass. I think we've got J-Lo and Jessica Biel and ladies like that to thank for that. And the cool thing, the thing that I love the most about it being the decade of the butt is that you can actually do something about it in a healthy way, and it's good for you. You know, if you build yourself an ass, like, that's going to help protect your low back, you know, help mm-hmm. protect, like, it helps with sports performance. It looks good, and it's an achievable goal. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going for the waif look, like, you know, whenever that was popular, the like emaciated waif look, like, that's not healthy, and not everybody can achieve that, you know. And granted, not everyone can get, you know, a J-Lo booty, but you can build yourself an ass through, you know, through heavy strength training. So that's probably my favorite thing about it being the decade of the booty, is that it's a positive goal. It's a goal that every woman can achieve on some level, and it's good for you. So
it's not just for the women, you know. I mean, I'm serious. Like, guys who are, you know, trying to get their deadlift numbers up and their squat numbers up, you know, we can do all right too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, you know, a lot of guys, they think girls like a nice chest or nice arms or whatever. And I'm like, show me the ass. I'm so much more impressed with a nice butt, nice back. And I actually really like hands a lot, too, on a guy. I had to write an article for Chad Smith's site about body parts that I like. I'm a big hand person, too. But they have to look like they've done something. They can't be all like tender and soft and stuff. That's just creepy. So but that goes along with the deadlifting, right? If you deadlift a lot, you get the nice ass, you get the nice back, you get the nice hands. So,
yeah, I think a common sign, you know, talking to when I was out at I was out at Perform Better in Arizona, and I was talking to some people out in the hallway and some of the female trainers that were there. Somehow we got into the conversation of like the super skinny jeans for dudes.
Oh, dude, that's just
for
creepy.
Dudes.
No, that's just, it's wrong on so many levels. I mean, it's just wrong. Your jeans should not be too tight for me to wear.
No, yeah, I mean, it's like they're making like skinny leg jeans for guys.
Yeah, no, I see them all over. I mean, we're in Kentucky. I know we're decades behind in almost everything, but dudes here wear skinny leg jeans and they don't look like they've washed their hair in like 5 years. And it's just not cool, man. Like, I don't, yeah, you're, no, it's just not good. It's just not good. Yeah. And if you have an ass, you can't wear skinny leg jeans anyway. So
yeah.
It just kind of all goes hand in hand. Real men don't wear skinny jeans.
That's one thing that just like bugs me. I'll just like see that. I'll see that shit in a mall or something like that when I'm out, and I'll just like, it'll just make me mad. It'll put me in a bad mood for a little bit because it just reminds me of like where society is going. And it makes me feel like I'm getting old because I'm starting to be that guy. It's like, look at those young like kids. Why are they dressing like that?
Whippersnappers. Why are those whippersnappers dressing like that?
Come on. They can't even like look up to walk. They've got their eyes planted into their iPhone and all that crap.
All right. To be a crotchety old man, Kevin.
I know. It's getting pretty bad. So let's talk a little bit about nutrition recommendations, because we got a lot of questions on nutrition and, you know, like how to change my diet to kind of lose those last couple pounds. When it comes to giving guidelines or recommendations, how do you approach that with clients, or do you kind of like, do you farm that out? I know some people farm it out too.
Yeah. Well, obviously I don't have, you know, any kind of degree in nutrition. I have studied it, quite a bit. And I actually really want, speaking of John Berardi earlier, I really want to get the precision nutrition certification. And I, for our our in the gym clients. Now, I have, like I mentioned, I have Hashimoto's, I have autoimmune hypothyroidism. My business partner has ulcerative colitis, and a young woman that works for us has fibromyalgia. And we've actually all been able to manage the symptoms of our autoimmune issues with a gluten-free diet. I know gluten-free is like so controversial and trendy, and you know, people are like, oh, only 1% of people have celiac, and you know, everyone has an opinion. You say gluten-free and people either scoff at you and laugh at you like you're an idiot, or they say, oh my gosh, it's done so much for me, it's changed my life. So, and they think everyone should be gluten-free. So the way that we approach it, because we've had such good results with it, is that we recommend everybody in our gym try, you know, pulling gluten, pulling dairy out for about 30 to 60 days. At the end of 30 to 60 days, we recommend they add it back in and see how they feel. And we like that approach because we're not zealots about it. You know, we're not, this is the only way. Like, we have people that have pulled gluten out and not felt better. You know, they have not felt any difference whatsoever. I'm not going to tell that person that they can't ever eat gluten. You know, I'm not going to tell that person that that's what's for them. I would say about 75 to 80% of our clients notice some improvement. If they don't notice an improvement, then they notice that they feel worse when they add it back in. So they might not have noticed like, oh, I feel remarkably better. But they do notice that they add it back in. They're like, I was sick as a dog the next day. And there's always the argument that, you know, oh, well, they ate pizza. Well, they felt like crap because they ate pizza. They didn't eat, you know, a healthy kind of gluten-filled food or whatever. So anyway, that's kind of our main basic guideline that we tell people, because worst case scenario, it gets them eating more meat and vegetables. It gets them eating more protein, more vegetables, more fats. And I don't really see how you can go wrong with that. So that's the approach that we take. We tell people to try to cut it out, you know, try to cut out the breads and grains and, you know, refined carbohydrates and sugars and, you know, refined dairies and things like that for 30 to 60 days, see how they feel, add it back in. We recommend protein, vegetables, and fat with pretty much every meal, and centering carbs around your training. Again, pretty basic. If someone wants something more specific, I do a one-on-one nutrition programming. But those are the basics. And we also recommend an 80-20 rule for most people. You know, 80% of the time, eat really well. 20% of the time, enjoy yourself. And if you're wanting a lot, you know, better results than 90-10. So if you eat 4 meals a day over 7 days a week, 28 meals a week, 2 or 3 of them could be, you know, kind of off plan or what you wouldn't normally eat. And the rest of the time should be good stuff. But, you know, eating real food as close to nature as possible. If it doesn't spoil within 7 to 10 days, don't eat it. You know, if your great-grandparents didn't have access to it, don't eat it. Those are kind of our general guidelines. But we just want people to eat real nutrient-dense food as much as possible. And if, you know, again, we've helped so many people or been able to point them in the direction of a nutrition kind of way of eating that has helped with asthma, eczema, joint pain, you know, psoriasis, IBS, you know, all kinds of issues. So again, as controversial as it is, we recommend people try it. And if they like it, cool. If they don't, cool.
It's just controversial for the people that have, you know, too much time to talk about crap on the internet because it, again, like you mentioned, it's just like eat real food and, you know, try not to eat too much of it and you'll pretty much be good to go. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a problem where you're kind of like, you know, there's all kind of analogies that people say, like, you know, just shop around the outside of the right. supermarket. Just don't go into the aisles. Although in the front of the supermarket, there's still tons of crap because you just gotta make sure you preface that. You know, like you said, I think there's so many, you know, quote unquote diets out there that if you can kind of just like find one that seems to be pretty natural and you can, you know, stick to it and it's livable, you know, that's cool. Me personally, I can't give up my Greek yogurt.
Right.
That's like my big sticking point.
I think if Greek yogurt is your biggest problem, Kevin, I think you're doing okay. I mean, I do cream in my coffee. You know, I try to get like unpasteurized, like non-homogenized raw cream that like expires within like 2 days of opening it. It's like You know, I try to get, again, stuff as close to nature as possible. I was actually doing the raw milk thing for a while. Mm-hmm. I had a dealer here. Literally, I had a drop-off point. It was hilarious. It was so funny. So technically, I owned a share in the cow, and I paid a maintenance fee to get the milk from my cow that I owned. So that was kind of how they got around it. But I did that for a while, and then I ended up moving, so it didn't really make sense anymore because geographically I'd have to drive a lot further to get it. But find something that you can live with, and, you know, like you said, eat real food most of the time, and you'll pretty much be good. And again, yeah, people who want to fight about it on the internet, I see people like, is this paleo? You know, like making fun of paleo, making fun of this, making fun of that. And it's just like, dude, like, if what I do works for my clients and what you do works for your clients, then that's great. And, you know, people, again, they want to make fun of diets and make fun of what other people are doing.
The people that don't like to have fun, like, you know, Jonathan Fass and Brecken Trares and Cassandra, they just did a Foresight, just did a great podcast talking about the paleo diet and stuff like that. And I think, you know, if people are kind of interested in it, it's a great episode to listen to kind of get some more information and get some of the, those guys are all nerds, so they're all research, you know, right, based and no fun zone type stuff. So you're going to get pretty much strict answers. Where again, like, you know, I kind of go back to, you know, people who are just starting to say, you know, poo-poo over this paleo stuff. I'm not a paleo fan, but it kind of tells people to eat certain foods that are healthy. So I think if people need just like a list of foods that, you know, just take out the part where it says paleo and you give them those list of foods, I think they're going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, I kind of want to touch on, I got a question from a woman on my page, and she said, you know, how do you kind of bust through this fat loss plateau? And she's a client of ours. So she said she knew what I was going to say. You know, she said, I eat well. I know her training's on point, obviously, because she trains with us. And she said, you know, sleep and stress management are good, because that's usually when people are like, oh, I'm eating well and I'm, you know, my training's good. And, you know, then I say, what's your sleep like? What's your stress like? So she knows, she already knew I was going to say that. So she knocked out all the big answers. So I have actually written a series recently called How to Bust Through a Fat Loss Plateau. And I touch on training in the first section. I touch on nutrition in the second. And I touch on lifestyle in the third. And to give you a very quick and brief overview, the training talks about, at one point I say, stop, take a deep breath, step away from the spin bike. And it's just talking to the people who tend to way, way, way overdo things and way overdo the cardio and, you know, don't do enough strength training and just, again, push themselves too hard. The nutrition talks about, you know, if you've been in a deficit for 36 weeks, like, holy moly, you need to eat some food. You know, like, if you've been like under eating for so long, then, you know, you probably need to bump your calories up. And then, of course, making sure that your timing is on point with your nutrients and stuff. You know, there's four things that you can manipulate in a diet. And that's calorie level, you know, how much you're eating. That's macronutrient ratio, so protein, carbs, and fat. That's timing, so when you're eating, what you're eating. And it's food sources. So are you getting your carbs from ice cream, or are you getting them from rice, you know, or apples or whatever? And any diet out there only manipulates those four things. And I think when you put it like that, people are like, oh, okay, you know, that kind of makes sense. And I think that they're all important on some level, for sure. But anyway, so there's, you know, most women that come to me that have been trying to lose body fat and can't, aren't eating enough. And obviously there's the camp that can't lose body fat because they're eating garbage and they're eating too much. But the majority of women that come to me desperate aren't eating enough. And on average, I raise my nutrition clients' calories by about 30 to 50% over the first 4 to 8 weeks that they're working with me. So that's a really, really big problem I see. And then, of course, in lifestyle, there's sleep, there's stress management, there's recovery. You know, if you're kicking your own butt in the gym, or if you're using the stress from the gym to manage the stress in your life, then and you're at a fat loss plateau, then there's a good chance that might be what's holding you back. And again, the, you know, hormone stuff, I've had so many hormone issues, and I've had blood tests, saliva tests, urine tests, stool tests, skin tests, like everything under the sun. And the hard thing with hormones is that it's kind of like chasing a moving target, because you know, get your test done and then your doctor adjusts your meds a little bit, and then you go get more tests done, and then they adjust, you know, so it's kind of frustrating. But I'd like to say for her, to answer her question, if you have done everything, if you know that your nutrition is on point, if you know that your training is on point, if you know your sleep and your stress management are on point, in general, you need to outsource it. I mean, I have a coach, I have a nutrition coach, I have a training, you know, I have a trainer, I have people who write my stuff for me, because you can't see your own stuff clearly. Like, I don't know if you write, do you write your own training programs, Kevin, usually?
I take time, times where I outsource it though, just to get a fresh look at what I'm doing.
Absolutely. You know, I think it's so important, and especially with nutrition. Again, I just outsourced my nutrition recently because I was tired of thinking about it and I couldn't see myself clearly, you know, and the accountability factors there. So if you feel like you've gotten to a plateau, hiring a coach is hugely important. You can also, that's, you know, a lot of times we tell people not to worry about it. Like we were just talking about, we're like, eat real food most of the time, not too much, train, and you'll get the body you want. But let's be honest. I mean, there is a time to kind of get nitty gritty for the females when they're getting down into the teens in terms of body fat percentage. For the guys, you know, when they want to get really, really lean and see veins in their low abs, like for most people, you're going to have to get into the nitty gritty details. And that's when you have to start, doing more, you know, more cardio or really, really monitoring your calories. Like I'm not a huge fan of, you know, counting calories and counting macros. Most of my nutrition clients do it because otherwise they won't tell me, they won't be able to gauge and let me know exactly what they're eating. And I, if they're a distance client, it's really important for me to see exactly what they're doing. But if you are stuck and you've been stuck, then, you know, it might, knowing exactly what you're eating is important. So you might have to start counting macros. You might have to start logging things. You might have to outsource to a coach. You might have to start using some tips and tricks, you know, doing cardio first thing in the morning, doing, you know, adding more low intensity kind of stuff. You might start experimenting with some more intense supplements, you know, the acetyl L-carnitines and the, you know, the Yohimbes even. I'm not recommending these things to people. I'm just saying, like, if you're, this woman in particular is quite lean, who, the one who's asking me about the fat loss plateau, she's very, very lean, especially in her upper body. I know she feels like she struggles with her lower body. I think 99% of women in America would die to have her body. But, you know, that's when you're going to have to start, like I said, getting way more detailed and possibly taking supplements. And for the general population, I would, if they feel like they're at a fat loss plateau, like I said, reading that article, those articles that I wrote would probably be helpful. But for this woman in particular, who's already lean, my biggest question would be, how lean do you want to get? You know, what's reasonable? What, you know, these fitness magazines, these airbrushed females, that's not real. And they don't look like that all the time. My friends in the fitness industry, I know they don't look like that all the time. And I mean, I'm sure you've probably experienced the same thing.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's definitely one of those things that we'll probably continue to talk about going through the rest of the questions. But we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the other side. More with Molly. All right, we're back from that quick music break, and we're going to continue going through some of the questions that we got from the audience. And this is one question that we get a lot on the show, and I'm sure you're asked about it a lot as well, but it's about getting to that first elusive chin-up for women. Can you talk a little bit about how you like to program towards that goal?
Absolutely. I love chin-ups, pull-ups. I think there's something so empowering for a female about being able to move her own body weight, especially with her upper body where we tend to be a little bit weaker. And I think it's also first important to define what is a pull-up versus a chin-up. We consider a pull-up to be palms facing away, a chin-up to be palms facing towards the body, and then a neutral grip pull-up to be palms facing each other. And I will say that we normally start women off with neutral grip. I know some people start off with chins, which is fine, chin-ups with the palms towards you, but we always start with neutral grip. It's a little bit more shoulder-friendly, and we do not have women – we don't really have women do pull-ups, like, you know, kind of the overhand palms away grip much at all. I think they're fine if you can do them well, and if you can do several of the neutral grip or chin-ups, then I think it's fine if you want to practice those. But in general, we tend to err on the side of caution. So, but anyway, yeah, it's really, really important. I mean, obviously getting stronger overall, is hugely important. A pull-up is a lot more of a core exercise. You know, I kind of hate the term core, but it's a lot more of a full body exercise than people expect. So obviously getting strong all over is really important. We do a ton of inverted rows at our gym. You can do them on a TRX, you can do them on on rings, whatever you like. But the cool thing about those is, you just walk your feet up or down more depending on how hard or how easy you want it to be. But we use a lot of inverted rows. We do a lot of chin up holds. That's probably one of the first things that we do with people is we have them jump up and hold themselves at the top. And as they get a little bit stronger, then they can do the eccentric portion where they jump up and then slowly lower themselves down. We incorporate bands, where you loop a band around the bar. You can put your foot or your knee in there, or both knees, whatever, and whatever you need to get the amount of resistance you need to get yourself up there. And, the cool part about that, obviously, is it follows the strength curve. So at the bottom where you need more help, you get more help. And at the top where you need less help, you get less help. So we're a big fan of those. And once you can do one, going from one to two or from two to three or from three to five, I think is way easier than getting from zero to one. So don't get discouraged, stick with it. And if you want to get good at chin-ups or pull-ups, do them often. We were talking about that earlier. Chin-ups and pull-ups are something that I notice if you don't do them often, you lose them very quickly, even if you're getting stronger in other areas. And they don't seem to be something that beats the body up very much, in my experience. You might be a little sore, but it's not something that's hard to recover from. I love, at the house I used to live in, I had a chin-up bar going from my bathroom to my closet. And you can imagine how many times every day I went from my bathroom to my closet. So I would just jump up and do a chin or two whenever I walk through there. I'd like to think I did it every time, but just do them often and stick with them. And I think in the beginning, you can probably do them 2 to 3 days a week if you're just doing, holding yourself up over the bar, doing some eccentrics. And then once you can do them, I like mixing higher rep body weight with lower rep, either weighted or, maybe like a slow concentric hold at the top, slow eccentric, things like that. So just mixing them up.
Cool. So everyone get out there. I want people reporting back with new chin-up PRs.
Absolutely.
So again, keeping it kind of in the realm, I mean, being, with Girls Gone Strong, I mean, did we get to talk about that a little bit? Let's talk a little bit about the origin of that, because I figured that, or I think that that's like a really important thing that the audience, the females should know about.
Yes, I won't give you the whole backstory, but about seven of us got together about a year and a half ago, and we're just kind of getting together casually to get in a training session and hang out, and we realized that we all had the same goal of helping women feel better and look better with good nutrition and training information. There's all kinds of crappy nutrition and training information out there, like don't lift more than 3 pounds. I'm not even going to like do her justice of saying her name. That woman drives
me crazy. You're crazy.
You suck. We don't like you.
I have a video on the website from one time Gwyneth Paltrow was on Oprah and like saying oh yeah, just be, I can't, like, she'd be like, oh yeah, my arm's too big on one side because I have to pick up my kid on one side.
No,
so
you know what she said? She said, this arm looks, she said, I have to do more reps with this side because I hold my son, my 30-pound son, in the other arm and yeah, it looks better. So she actually said something decent, but was on there with that evil, evil woman. So, you know, no, she actually, like, said the opposite because she said, I have to do more reps on this side because the other side looks better because I carry my 30-pound son.
I just blocked it out of my, I've been suppressing that in my subconscious. But anyways, please don't sue me. I didn't say, I mean, she didn't get anyone killed.
So I wish we were cool enough to, like, for her to listen to this and get sued so that she would know that she sucks. But anyway, it's just the least empowering thing you can ever tell a woman. You know, don't lift more than 3 pounds. Like, okay, don't go have a baby. Don't carry your groceries. Don't carry your freaking purse.
Well, I think it's like a weird thing because I think, you know, talking, you know, with other people, it seems like they're still like, if someone comes into the gym and says, that's what I want to look like. Like, what do you say? No? Like, oh, all right. Like, because some people still kind of, I mean, in Hollywood, they still want that look. They want that, you know, female look. And I think, you know, it's just a more or less a problem with, you know, I guess the media and stuff like that in society. But,
well, a really quick caveat, and I wish Lee was on here because I love her and I got kind of this idea from her. But, well, one thing that I always say is if you want long, lean muscles, get different parents. If you want the best version of the body you were given, lift heavy things, sprint occasionally, walk often, you know, laugh, eat good food, sleep, get your sunshine. Like that's like the nitty gritty, like, you know, that's just like what it all boils down to. But the thing that I get from Lee, and I say this a lot, is when a woman comes to you and says, I don't want to get bulky, you know, I'm afraid lifting weights is going to make me bulky, do not tell her that she's wrong. Because the first thing that she's going to do, if you, you know, say, oh, this belief that you've had for 10 years is wrong, is she's going to shut you out. And I reference a article that Lee did where she talked about women thinking that Jessica Biel is bulky, women thinking that Jennifer Garner's bulky, women thinking, you know, these things. So when a woman says, I'm afraid I'm going to get bulky, my first thing that I ask is, what does bulky mean to you? Because if it means Jessica Biel, then this conversation's over. I can't help you, you know? And so it's probably best if you go, you know, if maybe you train somewhere else. And I'm not that like short and rude about it, but if they think Jessica Biel looks bulky, then they are going to think that the body that I help them get is bulky. So they're going to be unhappy, right? I think along the way, if they actually did it, they would end up falling in love with their bodies. But if that's what they think, you know, then weight training is probably not for them, you know, unfortunately, not eating and dancing around a room for 2 hours, 6 days a week might be for them. I don't know. But, you know, so I want to help as many women as I can, but I don't have the time and energy to fight with women about how I think their body should look. It's not my job to impose that. And I'd rather spend my time and energy helping women who do want to look the way that I think I can help them look. So anyway, I got that from Lee in terms of women thinking Jessica Biel's bulky. Like, again, that conversation's, you know, probably over. And I hope that they change their mind and end up liking a lean, athletic female look. But if they don't, then they don't. So anyway, I've gotten off on a tangent. What was the question? Oh, Girls Gone Strong. So, yeah, we got together about a year and a half ago, decided that we wanted to change the way that, you know, change the landscape of you know, training and nutrition information for women. There were 7 of us when it started out. There are 3 of us now. Some of the other women decided to pursue other projects, which, of course, we love them to pieces and, you know, but totally understand that there were other things that were lighting their fire a little more than GGS. So the ladies who are left are myself, Allie McKee, and Nagar Fanouni. And we have huge, huge, huge plans for the future, but what it boils down to is being the trusted source for good nutrition, training, and lifestyle information for females and empowering them to change the way that they feel about themselves, you know, mentally, physically, emotionally, you know, all through strength training, because we've all had these huge transformations emotionally and in terms of our confidence and self-esteem and self-worth based on strength training, and we want other people to have that, you know, experience the awesomeness that we've experienced. changing our lives through lifting. And so that's what it's all about. And we've got girlsgunstrong.com where people can see, you know, our articles and learn more about us. And we've got a Facebook page. So,
okay. So, yeah. So I guess that we kind of should have, I should have prefaced that as a producer and host, I should have done a better job doing that. But, okay, so now we're really getting into the questions from the audience. For real. So I'm going to do my best with names, and I'm going to do my best. I did summarize some of the questions that we got. Yeah. So just keep that in mind. I did not. I had to edit some questions due to size. So, yeah. Teresa has the first question. She says, "Hi, I am from Slovakia, and I have a nutrition question. I've tried many diets. Is this woman you were talking about before?"
No, this, okay. I don't know this woman.
Okay. I have tried many diets from carb cycling to Palumbo diet, which I've never heard of. And
it's a ketogenic Dave Palumbo diet.
Oh, okay. And then also a little bit of the paleo diet. What do you recommend for getting lean and strong? I am doing powerlifting and CrossFit. Thank you for your advice, and I wish you all the best. So I think we kind of hit on that a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We've definitely hit on that. You know, doing powerlifting and CrossFit without knowing exactly what she's doing, it's hard to say, but it sounds like she trains really hard. So fueling her body for her training is going to be huge. Mm-hmm. You know, making sure, again, if she's doing a paleo style diet, a lot of times that tends to be a little bit lower carb. So she would definitely have to focus on, you know, making sure she's getting enough carbs for her training. That could be sweet potatoes, you know, regular potatoes, fruit, white rice, you know, butternut squash, things like that. And really, all of those diets work on some level. Carb cycling works, ketogenic diets work, paleo diets work, because you're focusing on your nutrition and you're probably eating, you know, whole foods and eating really well. So for getting lean and strong, I've seen all of those diets work for people. I think it's figuring out, again, what you can live with. And also going back to that chasing a moving target, like the body, you know, the body is going to try to maintain homeostasis. So you might have to change up your diet regularly. There was a time that higher carb, higher protein, lower fat worked for me. And there was a time that carb cycling worked for me. And there was a time that more of like the anabolic diet, ketogenic, you know, diet worked for me. And there was a time that I did intermittent fasting for a while. And now I'm outsourcing my nutrition and I'm back to eating 5 or 6 meals a day and I'm eating carbs throughout the day. So, you know, just because that's what my coach, what my coach wants to try with me for a while. So I think it's a lot of self-experimentation. And again, those are all good diets. And as long as she's fueling her training with sound nutrition and getting enough sleep, she should be fine. Any of those that she likes can work as long as she can live with it. So hope cool. That's, I know it's a little vague, but you know, yeah.
We kind of have to be. I mean, it's you know, it's hard to be specific.
It's an internet question
things.
From someone I've never met.
Well,
you
totally.
Know?
So. So here's a more general question from Kimberly. What are your go-to lifts that always seem to stay in your program?
Yeah, absolutely. I know Kimberly. Kimberly's wonderful. Hi, Kimberly. Right now, I am a Turkish get-up like fiend and fool. So I'm doing get-ups all the time. I actually hurt my back a little over a year ago. I was deadlifting from a deficit. Did 300 for a double with no belt and lost my neutral spine a little bit and have been battling with some back issues ever since. The deadlift was the straw that broke the camel's back. I cannot stabilize my pelvis and it's a little bit tilted. So that's the problem. Then, of course, like I said, the deadlift broke the camel's back. So I've been working to get back to that. Normally, it would be squats, deadlifts, chin-ups, you know, push-ups, any kind of prowler, sled, split squats. I mean, just your basic big movements. But arm bars and get-ups are actually like huge in my program right now because they help my back feel better. And I have a goal of getting a 90-pound get-up by May. And I've never seen another female do it. I think there probably are females that have done it, but I've never seen it. I've seen 88 pounds. I've seen a 40 kilo. I've never seen a 41 kilo. So I'm going to get it and I'm going to kick that kettlebell's ass. I'm going to own it and it's going to be awesome. So for right now, it's get ups and arm bars, but it's normally squat, bench, dead, push up, pull up, row, plank, split squat. So
the good stuff,
the meat and potatoes.
Awesome. Got another question from Leslie. Would love to hear how you decided to get into your business and also, I guess, in the fitness profession and the process you've been through to come to get to where you are today. What would you suggest for others that might be interested in following a similar path to you? Anything that is crucial or anything to avoid?
Don't do it. I work 90 hours a week. No, I'm just kidding. I absolutely love, love, love what I do. So if anyone who's interested in fitness, I would recommend it. It sounds kind of funny, but like you really have to put yourself out there. And I see, you know, a lot of strength coaches that have been coaching for a long time, you know, 15, 20 years. And they're a little salty that they don't get the recognition that other people get. And some of them don't care at all, which is fine. But some of them do care. But then again, they don't seem to be doing what it takes to put themselves out there. So whether you, you know, there's some arguments again about how much experience you need before you should start a blog and before you should have products and this and that. But and I do think it's important to know what you're talking about and have experience and be a good coach before you do that. But putting myself out there was crucial. I mean, literally part of the reason I'm in Girls Gone Strong is because I was putting videos on YouTube. As silly as that sounds, I was putting them out there. You know, I was putting myself out there. I was answering people's questions. I was on forums. And so my videos started showing up on Ben Bruno's page. And then Brett Contreras took notice of them. You know, I friended a lot of people on Facebook that I didn't know just because I respected their work. And I really put myself out there. I started writing articles for Elite FTS. And, you know, I got reamed the first time I wrote an article, and people were saying horrible things about me, and I just kept at it and didn't really care. So, well, I cared, but I, you know, had to get over it and continue to put myself out there. So, in terms of getting to where I am and having a blog and being part of Girls Gone Strong and having an internet presence and, you know, getting to be interviewed by people like you, putting yourself out there is very important. In terms of having your own business and training and, you know, being good at your job, which I like to think I'm decent at my job, finding a mentor. I mean, Jim Laird, like, love his soul. He's one of my favorite people in the whole world. He puts up with me. He's taught me pretty much everything that I know in terms of training. And I've just been really, really lucky to have someone like him to learn from. And then again, picking other kind of mentors, you know, Mike Robertson and Bill Hartman would be the other two. And getting into a lot of different areas, you know, IFAST and Elite FTS are like about as far apart as you can get. You know, one of them's, you know, smash freaking weights and, you know, you're just the elite of the elite, you know, powerlifters and bodybuilders and stuff. And IFAST tends to have a more corrective, you know, kind of athletic feel. And so, you know, getting into a lot of different areas, getting experience, learning from a lot of different people would be huge. But finding a mentor, biggest thing ever, find someone who's done it a lot longer than you and is a lot better and smarter than you. And if you want kind of the internet presence and the you know, the blog and getting to know more people in the industry, you know, putting yourself out there, putting out good information, you know, and just consistently being willing to help people who get in touch with you. So,
yeah, you brought up a good point. Just like friending people on Facebook, I couldn't, you know, I can't even count how many, you know, awesome people I've just met who just sent me a message saying, you know, I've listened to the show before. Can you just give me some advice about getting into the industry? And do it. Contact us. We are not really that important. We are just we are just regular people, and we, you know, like you said, you know, having an internet presence is really nothing. If someone has a big ego from having an internet presence, they're really just a dick. You want to stay away from them anyways. But, you know, make use of any of these people like that have come on the show and stuff like that. Like, hit them up on Twitter, hit them up on Facebook, and ask some questions and ask for advice or ask for help. Like, people, you know, we'll help you. Like,
yeah, people in the industry are very willing to help. And I will say, like, I'm getting to the point now with having my gym and being here so much and stuff, I am getting a little busier. It's a little harder to get back to people in a timely fashion, but I will always try to get back to you. I just discovered this other messages section of Facebook, and I think I want to shoot myself because I have people that wrote me back in like October and November that I hadn't seen until now. So hopefully I'm going to try to take a couple hours one day soon and write those people back. But, you know, my business partner, Jim, I think he somehow contacted Rob Wolf about getting him on his radio show. So my partner, Jim, has a radio show and he wanted to interview Rob. And over the last year or two, they've actually become really, really good friends. Rob contributed to a product that Jim and I did together, and they're getting ready to go hang out at Paleo FX together in a couple weeks. So, I mean, it can happen. You know, again, we're not people on the internet. Like, when people are like, oh, I'm a fan of your work, I'm like, oh, they must be talking to the person standing behind me, because I don't, you know, you just, it's just nothing special. But definitely, you know, put yourself out there, contact people that you want to hear from. You know, I'm glad she wrote in and asked me so that I could pass that information along to her. But It's a lot of hard work, a lot of putting yourself out there and being brave, and some luck too. So.
Yeah, and in the worst case scenario, you don't get a reply, which is not like no one's going to take the time to say stop, you know, stop bugging me. You're
leave
nuisance
me
and stuff.
Alone.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, no one's going to do that. So penultimate question, what's your favorite out of the gym workout? And that's from Tamara.
Yes. Gosh, I would probably say hill sprints. I'm a big, big, big fan of hill sprints. Love hate relationship with them.
You have a
favorite
hill that you go to?
You know, to be honest, I wish I could be like, oh yeah, I go to this one all the time. But with my back, I have to be really careful, sprinting mm-hmm. now. When you can't stabilize your pelvis and your back hurts, then doing sprints, yeah, doing something at really, really high speed that can be difficult to control is not exactly fun. But, no, I do have a hill that I was going to for a while that I really liked that was by my old house. But I'm confident my back is going to feel better soon. So as soon as it does, I'm going to have to pick another hill that's closer to my new house that I'm living in. So yeah, hill sprints for sure. Just do a quick dynamic warm up, about 5 to 10 minutes, and then get after it. Sprint up, walk down until you almost get sick, and then you're done.
Perfect. All right. So finally, you know, we mentioned a little bit about it beforehand, but is there any stuff that you have coming up, or you know, where's the best place that people can check you out after the interview?
Absolutely. Well, I've got mollygalbraith.com. So MollyGalbraith, mollygalbraith.com. That's my website. I try to post new blog posts once or twice a week. They might not always be good, but I'm cranking them out. No, I'm just kidding. And I talk about everything, nutrition, training, life. I lost my dad about 14 months ago. So I've been talking a lot about you know, meaning of life type stuff lately. So hopefully if you're into that, I've been talking about that a lot lately. But yeah, that's my website. I've got girlsgonestrong.com, which is exactly what it sounds like, girlsgonestrong.com. And we post about at least twice a week with new articles, training, nutrition, lifestyle. I've got my gym website, which is j-mstrength.com. And that's, you know, if you're local and you want to check it out. I'm on Twitter, Molly Galbraith, pretty easy. I'm on Facebook. My personal Facebook is maxed out, which is kind of embarrassing because when people try to friend me, it's like, oh, her Facebook is maxed out. She has reached her limited number of friends. You're now subscribed to her, which I think is the most obnoxious and annoying thing ever. So if you get that, I'm very sorry, but you can subscribe to my Facebook if you want and you'll get my updates. Or you can find my kind of health and fitness, like public figure page, which is also Molly Galbraith. So just a whole lot of Molly Galbraith on Twitter, on Facebook, on my website. And I would be remiss not to tell you guys about the Train Like a Girl seminar that we're having at my gym in Lexington, Kentucky on May 18th and 19th. I was actually writing up some copy for an email that's going to go out. It's going to be amazing. First day is lecture. Second day is a little bit of lecture and mostly hands-on. It's going to be myself, my partner, Jim Laird. It's going to be Julia Ladusky, who is a strength coach and the program director at the Parisi Speed School.
I'm interviewing her next, by the way.
Oh, are you? She's awesome. She's one of my favorite people. We were just together last weekend. So she's the bomb. Yeah, Parisi Speed School, female strength coach at Buffalo, elite level powerlifter in 3 weight classes. I mean, sometimes I want to punch her in the face because she's so awesome at everything. She will be there. Mike Robertson of iFast will be there. Kiefer of Dangerously Hardcore Carb Backloading will be here. We're going to have guys named Steve Long and Jared Wolliver from Smart Group Training. They're guys who incorporate the FMS into their group training, which is super, super cool. Guys Ryan Patrick, Chris Freeman, some of our friends who are awesome trainers. The girl that works with me, Lucy Hendricks, is going to be there. So all kinds of amazing coaches. We're going to be doing everything from breathing to the warm-up to squat, bench, and deadlift to get-ups. I mean, it's going to be – you cannot miss it. It's going to be amazing. It's only $199, which is just a freaking steal. And seating is limited. We have not advertised it, and we've sold about a third of the seats already. So trainlikeagirlseminar.com is where you find out more about that. We will have the early bird special for another couple weeks. But like, oh my gosh, if you are a coach – it's for you, because if you're not training women, then you're not making as much money as you could be. And if you don't know how to train women, then you're not making as much money as you could be, and you're not helping as many women as you can. And if you're a female and you have questions about anything in terms of fat loss in females, performance in females, you know, how you should be squatting, benching, and deadlifting. I mean, all of that, you will get so much information and so much coaching. It's just insane. So it's for coaches and trainers. It's for women who just want to look better and feel better. It's for anyone that has a vested interest in knowing how to help females look better and feel better. So boom, there you go.
Very cool. And I don't want to forget, we don't have an off-topic discussion at the end of the show, but a very special revival of the FitCast supplement of Roger Lawson and I talking in a hotel room in Tokyo for about 40 minutes about traveling to Tokyo. You can catch that at the end of the show if you want to stick around and listen to that. And also, please, before I wrap this up, make sure you're checking me out on Facebook and on Twitter at Facebook or twitter.com/KevinLarrabee, because I'm trying to get questions for all these guests. I literally have, I think, 6 interviews scheduled in the next 2 weeks for people. So get glued to that, because this is what the next 2 months of episodes are going to be. I think I'm good. Molly, thanks for coming on.
No, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So we'll definitely catch up down the road. And if people have any feedback, like Molly said, check her out on Facebook and Twitter and the various social media sites, and check out her website. And until next time, thanks everyone for listening. And like I said, if you would like, stick around for some, about 40 minutes talking about traveling to Tokyo. Welcome to the FitCast Supplement Revival. This is Kevin Larrabee, and along with me from Tokyo, Japan, is Roger.
What's up?
So we are in Tokyo, and it's Saturday morning, and it's kind of early, so we can't get out. So we decided to do a quick podcast. And to give people a quick heads up, this is not going to really have a lot to do about fitness. This is why it's called the supplement. It's a little bit more of the off-topic stuff that we do. So if you're looking for specifically just fitness stuff, you can just stop playing this right now, because you're probably going to be annoyed and bummed out. We might hit on some stuff based on things going on in Japan and the fitness world, but who knows? We don't know what we're going to get into just yet. So anyways, like I said, we're in Tokyo for vacation.
Word up.
More or less. Roger's been traveling for the last couple of weeks.
It's ridiculous. I didn't think being gone this long would be take this toll on me, but this is my second week. So I was in Australia for 2 weeks. That was awesome. I got sunburned, and I've never been sunburned in my life, and this is ridiculous. I'm still peeling like a week after, but I have an amazing tan that none of you on the internet can see, so I'm sorry, but I got one more week of travel left, and then I go home broke. So this is the best place to go broke, apparently, for video games.
Yeah, well, you haven't gotten hit that hard. I spent about 200 and change on gaming stuff yesterday. So
for those of you that can't see this, which is all of you, he has an entire backpack filled with games. So what I have with clothes, he has with NES games, SNES?
Yeah, I bought like 25, I guess you would say, like Super Nintendo and Nintendo games yesterday. And then, jumping ahead just for a second, we finished up last night in downtown Shinjuku at the local Bic Camera, which has, it's like a huge department store. Which basically sells everything from clothes to washing machines to toilets, all the way up to TVs and video games, bikes, things like that. So there's this game called Soul Sacrifice for the PlayStation Vita that came out. It comes out in Japan about 55 days before it comes out in America. So I decided to pick that up here. And
tell them the backstory about how long it took you to pick the game up.
Yeah, so we'll get to that. Let's back up a little bit. But anyways, we finished up there, and that was like another $80 purchase, because it was a 2-pack of the game. so I can give another one to someone in the States. So I guess Roger got in around 11 o'clock yesterday to the hotel. Had a little trouble getting to the hotel.
That's my first experience in Tokyo. Hmm. Lost.
Yeah.
I don't know. The lady told me to get on this bus. You told me to get on the bus. I go on the bus.
I can't get blamed for this because I told you exactly where to go and what
I had
to
pictures
say.
And everything. You said, find this logo. I found the logo. The lady told me to get there. I got there. Some man took my ticket. It was like an hour and a half bus ride from the airport. And then I fell asleep for like 5 minutes, still in traffic. I was like, okay, I don't need to worry about this. Everyone gets off the bus at this one hotel, and I'm like, should I get off? No, I'll just stay here because it's not my stop. And then the guy gets back on, and he's like, oh. Like, he didn't expect for me to be there, and I'm confused. I'm like, why? Why are you confused, sir? I want to go to my hotel. And he just tells me that's the last stop, and I have to get off. So I don't have a map. I don't have any kind of bearings where I am. So I just kind of wandered around. I had Wi-Fi for a quick second, did some Google Maps, walked around, took pictures of the maps on the street, ran into some random cafes to kind of find my way. They barely spoke English, but they knew enough about Plaza Hotel to run around and point me at different stuff. So I think it said it took 15 minutes on Google Maps, but it took me like an hour to get to the hotel. So I think that's a good first day adventure.
Yeah, it's
like a boss.
Whatever, man. It's like, you know, you got here. And so once he got settled in, we took a and just give people a little bit of backstory. Like you said, it takes about an hour and a half to get from Narita Airport to Shinjuku, which is like just kind of like shows you how far away the airport is from the actual city. There's Haneda, which is another airport, which is like 25 minutes away. But it's a much smaller airport and not a lot of flights go there direct. And anyways, he got in. We went right to Akihabara, which is the electric town. That was our first stop was Go-Go Curry for the first time, which was like at noon. We got really lucky because in Tokyo, everyone goes out to lunch. So normally you go to places and it's like friggin' packed at noon. And we got super lucky to get in there. And we got some Go-Go Curry, which it was your first time having curry, right?
Yeah.
And
it was dope.
Yeah, it's really good. It's super good food. And I got it the night before, but it's like super local and we just needed something fast to eat before going out on our journey. So we got there and then we jumped on the train to Akiba and we started, you know, walking around and kind of stayed there for about 4.5 hours, 5 hours, no, 5.5 hours. And we just went into stores. I bought lots of used games, and Roger was looking for,
man,
Dragon Ball stuff.
So here's the thing. So we got to go back to Go-Go Curry. I thought you went up to the guy and ordered, but I guess you order from a machine and you get a ticket and then you give it to the guy. And then like 3 minutes later, they bring the food out, which is ridiculous to me. But I love it because I don't know how to...
Shit, we really need to go back there. I really want to get that again today.
Okay, you can go. I'll watch you.
Right.
I tapped out. I got the... okay, so there's two... What, how many sizes are there? Four? Small...
It's basically like the regular... The small size, which is like a kid size or for, you know, kind of for women. you know, basically, again, that's kind of like just how it's set up. And also there's like a medium, a large, and basically a king size. And really all you're paying for is just extra rice.
Yeah, that's where I messed up. I got the, I think I got the large or king size, and I thought I would get more meat. So it's the same meat, but then I just got a ton more rice, which was depressing because I wanted the chicken, which is delicious. So I tapped out like halfway through. I couldn't finish all that. Okay, you bring up a picture that no one can see.
Does not look really good?
That does. And now I want to go back, but I'm not. But it was so good. Like the rice is perfect, and I guess you were telling me that they take the rice seriously here in Tokyo.
Yeah, they have special rice cookers. I forget who makes. I think it's Zojirushi that makes these rice cookers, and it basically cooks the rice perfectly every single time. So it's which is kind of like an art. It's not super easy to do. So that was you know, it's kind of impressive because I haven't eaten Right, since the last time I was in Japan, and before that, it was the previous time I was in Japan, because I just don't eat rice. And but when you get it with this, you know, fried chicken and this curry and the rice, it's super good.
Side note on rice, if anyone wants to try this recipe, it's not really a recipe, it's more delicious. So you just take one serving of rice, 2 tablespoons of butter, and 1 tablespoon of sugar. Mixed, it's great post-workout. It's great anytime, actually, but that's the only kind of rice I can eat, especially now after I've been here. I can't just eat the regular stuff anymore. So, side tip for those at home who want to get diabetes or just get their pump on.
Well, you can get the rice cookers through Amazon, but they're like $400. Like, you're paying a lot for a rice cooker. Yeah, so I guess it's my third time here in Japan, so a lot of stuff isn't new. So I guess for me, it's a little bit more of a regular thing, staying at the same hotel as I did last time, same location. So it's easy to get to Shinjuku Station, which is your more or less go-to stop for everything. So you can get to pretty much anywhere you want to go from there. And I guess for you, it's your first time. So what were getting into the city, like what were the first things that kind of popped out to you that were kind of, you know, stood out?
It feels like New York. But then I'm looking everywhere and I realize I don't know a thing. I don't know what any of the signs say. People are having conversations. I have no idea what they're saying. I just feel lost, especially coming from Australia where it was an easy transition from America. I get here, I'm like, nope, I don't know what you're saying. And then I guess you said you saw. Okay, so here's what I'm wearing. I had jeans and I just got like a tank top on. So I got the guns out. And I guess everyone here does not wear sleeveless. I saw no one with sleeveless clothes on.
Yeah, well, again, it's like we kind of stand out just because we're not Japanese, but also because we're not wearing mostly black. Because, you know, the Japanese business culture is, you know, suit, white shirt, black tie. And everyone else pretty much wears black. And I'm wearing, like, jeans and a white button-up shirt, which is, like, not, you know, again, it kind of is like the polar opposite, so, or the contrast, but the, you know, again, we're going to stand out either way just because we look different. And, you know, with some of the things when you come to Japan, and I've talked about this on the fake ass before, but, you know, it is kind of like sometimes you do get called like an outsider because people, you know, are very, you know, I guess some Japanese people are very insular. They're just used to, they never leave the island, and they kind of don't like foreigners around because sometimes we can get in the way not knowing where we're going. But it's the same thing, like you ever see people that come to America and they don't really speak the language and they're trying to get places and you're like, Jesus, you're just getting in the way. You know, go home. So that's one thing that, you know, you have to kind of accept when you get here. But to be honest, as long as you don't let it get you, it's not a big deal. And you know, just stay out of people's way.
The thing I've learned is to keep walking wherever you go, because once you stop, someone's right behind you and they bump into you, and then there's this whole everyone saying sorry thing at the same time.
Yeah, I'm trying to give Roger some lessons on Japanese etiquette from what I learned the last couple times, like using the tray for the money and trying to just use more or less 2 words to get you out of all situations, which is like arigato and sumimasen, which covers everything. You really don't need to know more than that when you come to Japan, which is just thank you and excuse me, or sumimasen also means thank you. And it's like a universal phrase here. You hear it said a billion times when you're out during the day.
I apparently have been saying hi every time someone says something to me, so that's just yes. Is that right?
Yeah.
Sweet. So anything someone says to me, I just say yes.
Yeah, so if you're like buying something at checkout, you will say like, they'll like sometimes point something out to you. Like if I buy stuff, like because I'm buying used stuff, the cool thing about Japan is that they write down the complete condition on the cart or whatever you're buying. So there's no like room for error. You're not going to return it saying, I didn't know this. So sometimes I'll have to point stuff out. I'll have to say like, hey. Yeah, like yes, I understand. I know what I'm picking up. So again, that's a good thing to know. So we were in Akihabara for the afternoon, going into tons of stores. Roger learned that is for whatever reason, you walk into a store and it is 100 degrees no matter where you go. It's just super friggin' hot. We also hit up an arcade.
Yeah, that was dope.
Sega, we went to the Club Sega, which is the first one stationed outside of Akihabara, and played some Street Fighter 3 against each other, then some Roger played some Tekken Tag.
Which I'm awesome at, if anyone wants to come at me on pretty PlayStation, good. He wants to buy me the game, I'll play.
Yeah, it's a weird thing going there because it's, you know, it's weird. We were kind of there at lunchtime, so there was lots of guys in suits playing Street Fighter and playing Tekken and Virtual Fighter, which is kind of a weird thing to happen, but a weird thing to see because, again, when you come to America and games are for kids. Why do... Like we were talking before, like people always say all the time, like, Kevin, you're 27, why are you still playing video games? And I say, fuck you, because I like to do that in my free time. I don't have cable, so I'm not wasting my time. I'm a grown man, and I can, you know, I make money, and I like to spend it on stuff, so I can do that. and you can go back to watching Survivor or the America's Models. And shit like that.
You need to make a rap video out of this. It's just like to all the haters out there.
It's just so dumb. I'm like, you guys spend like, and there's some people that like spend like tons of money on alcohol. I don't buy alcohol, so I don't waste my money on that.
You get drunk on video games.
Yeah, my buddy Adam was sending me Google things while I was in Japan. He's like, dude, you gotta buy, like, drink lots of sake in there. Like, I don't like getting drunk. Like, it does nothing for me. So it's not like I'm not gonna go get smashed. If anything, I've had about 9 liters of green tea since I've been here in 2 days, which...
It's very fun to watch. He just sits there and just drinks it all at once. Doesn't breathe.
Well, I'm still jet lagged, so I need as much caffeine as I can get. So it's a lot of oolong tea and green tea.
This is the thing that threw me off, the smoking party. What it's called? You just make that up?
No, it is. Okay. Like, there's designated areas in the city where, like, it's almost, like, roped off where people can smoke. Because everyone smokes in the city, but you're not allowed to just go, like, walking by, like, in a crowd. You can't start smoking. You have to be in a designated smoking zone, which is nice.
Hilarious to me. It's like a farm for smoking. So, like, we came down the steps, and then we just look. Yeah. There's all these people in suits. And
like, over 100 people just smoking together.
It's hilarious. They're just, like, smoking each other's face. It's like, it cracks me up.
Well, it's
a farm.
It's weird because literally everyone smokes here. And, you like, on my flight from Boston to Japan, you have your duty-free shops. And people literally they maxed out. You can buy 500 cigarettes, and they maxed out. At the duty free shop, they bought like whatever 500 packs of cigarettes just because, you know, people smoke so goddamn much here. And, you know, another thing we were talking about is that one of the good things about here and the bad things about here is that the food is incredible. And there's tons of pastries and, you know, fried food. And basically, it's carbs and fat is basically what you eat here. You know, obviously, there's sushi. And things like that, but it's amazing how good a shape most of the people are in. You do see some people that are overweight, but for the most part, people are in really good condition.
Yeah,
which is kind of cool to see.
I guess yes, because everyone walks around. They have bikes. Yeah, and yeah, they just keep, and the people that have cars have expensive cars. Was that guy driving some Mercedes last night?
No, pretty much like you'll see if you have a house and you can buy a car, you're usually what, like, rich. So you're not gonna buy like there's Toyotas here, but you're gonna see a lot of people with nice like Mercedes, like Benzes and like BMW stuff like that. So anyways, we got to in Akihabara, we walked around for a little bit. We went to Gogo Curry again around 3 o'clock. So we had like a 3-hour break. And again, it was, I was kind of getting sick of it. But now we're looking at a picture of it on my computer. And I really, like, holy shit, like, I really want to get it. Like,
what happened. Why you want to go back? You got to redeem yourself.
Oh, it's really good. Well, I by mistake ordered the small, I ordered like the kids' portion. when we went there the second time, and I was like bummed out because we were both like, yeah, we're gonna get the biggest one and just destroy it. And but I ordered the smallest one by mistake, and it just spits out the ticket. You can't just like hit cancel. And again, I don't know Japanese, so I can't say, oh, can I swap this out for something else? And I'm not going to cause like a big disturbance. It's not worth it. So, but maybe we will today. So we, again, we were in Akihabara till about 5 o'clock. And again, I basically till I filled my backpack full of games, and then we're like, went back to the hotel, emptied out. And, then we went out to Nakano Mall,
in streets
in Nakano, yeah, which is, it's basically like a long strip, and there's everything from clothes to pharmacies and like pharmacy type stores to, there's a grocery store in the basement, and, on the second floor is kind of like all the nerd stuff. So there's everything from old action figures to video games to, like hobby type shops. And the cool thing, we saw like lots of old action figures from like the 90s that they had there, and they were selling for relatively cheap.
Yeah, they had, they one place even had the, it was the Green Ranger dagger. It wasn't for sale.
Yeah, that
they
was
had
in the window. Yeah.
I'm sure I could have haggled in English with this man because he clearly knew what was going on. You could tell by the passion in my eyes that I wanted to buy it. But they had like old school X-Men. They had like Terminator, they had
Star
RoboCop
Trek
toys.
Yeah, Star Trek. They had for Star Trek fans out there, they had a Barkley, whatever it is.
Black dude.
No, it's not black.
Oh,
see, that's Cisco.
Not, oh,
that's,
see, I lost my street cred right there.
Barkley, who's like this like kind of nerd character on Star Trek. He's kind of like a bit character. They had his action figure for like $3. I really thought about getting it, and I probably should have, but. I still got two more days here, so I know I'm going to hit up Nakano Mall and probably Akihabara one more time before I leave, just because I only have like 25 games, so I usually try to get to the 40 mark.
I spend all my money on food because I like eating these days.
Yeah, you went to, when we were in Nakano, on the way out, you went to KFC.
There's backstory there. The only reason I went is because there is, I'm getting loud. All right. The only reason I went is they have these limited edition Dragon Ball Z, like,
small Nalgene bottles.
Nalgene bottles. Because there is a new movie coming out at the end of this
month. Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah, so I was wondering. I was like, this is sweet. So, that's the only reason, that's the only way I could get it. You can't buy one without getting some KFC. The KFC here was ridiculously, I wouldn't say it was good. I wouldn't say it wasn't delicious. But it was worth it.
They had real French fries.
Yeah, they had some thick-cut French fries. It was worth it, though, because now I got this Goku bottle that no one else can get. So if you want to buy it, you can't. You got to come to Japan.
How much was that value meal?
Well, it was like 1,400 yen. So what's that?
$15.
So $15. So essentially, I just bought the bottle. It was well worth it. That's probably the only thing.
No, but it's $15 for two, like, chicken strips
Yeah,
one breast?
Yeah, the portions here are small, which that's probably why everyone's so lean.
Yeah, portions, even if you go to McDonald's, like, they're large as, like, are small.
Yeah.
For the most part.
So essentially, I got, like, a small fry, a wing, a thigh, and, like, two chicken strips. So I finished the meal in, like, 18 seconds, but it was worth it. Because they have
water.
All these, yeah, free. I got two cups of water. So essentially, you get all, they have, like, seven different bottles that you can get, so I lucked up and got the Goku one, so I'm good. But it's ridiculous how big Dragon Ball is over here. I thought that it was not going to be as big, but Goku's pretty much everywhere, and this excites me to no end.
Yeah, that's one of the things I like, you know, about this place, is that, you know, a lot of the stuff that would be considered, like, nerdy is, like, pretty much commonplace, and there's a lot worse things. Like, we didn't really talk about it, but in Akihabara, there's lots of there's lots of anime porn shops, which are more or less it kind of gears towards like young, like super young looking girls, like schoolgirl type stuff, which is pretty gross. And that's probably one of the things that is just like it's just one of those weird things about Japan. And like just like
seriously, how screwed up is that? Like, do you see like 40-year-old guys going into these shops, like trying to get anime of like these girls that look like they're 12, 13, 14 years old? And this the crazy thing is, like, they're in random shops. So, like, I don't speak Japanese, so I'm just walking around like, oh, game shop. Oh, porn.
Here well, you go. It's set up like on some of the game shops. Basically, everyone sells DVDs here because DVDs are still huge. Like, you see a lot of people go digital in the States, but DVDs are still, they're A, super expensive, and B, really popular. And that's why there's lots of used shops. And, like, you could have two floors of games, and then go up one floor, and then you see a huge poster of, like, you know, a naked girl getting violated, which I luckily have.
He kept me away from. Yeah, I'm like, oh, what's upstairs? He's like, don't go there. You don't want to. I'm like, what's up? Is there more games? No.
No,
this is the worst games.
This is just broken dreams. Yeah,
there's just nothing but shame on this floor. And then you see eight people rush up with like big bags. You're like, oh no,
no,
stocking up.
Well, and it's weird because again, you'll see like it's. I don't know if it's necessarily okay, but it's less shameful for just to be porn jobs, and people like will just walk into them and they're. You know, people just start looking at porn and just chilling, which is kind of weird. But the, you know, again, we kind of stayed away from that stuff. And like I said, we went to Nakano Mall and, you know, bought some stuff there. Roger got KFC. And then we jumped back on the train, went to Shinjuku. And then we went out to downtown Shinjuku, kind of towards the red light district, but not into it, to... Again, just kind of look around. We went to the Bic camera, and that's where I bought the Soul Sacrifice and some more Vita cases. And we finished up the night with some crepes.
They were delicious crepes. Yeah, see,
crepes are effing fucking awesome here.
You got no cream though. I got all the ice cream. I got some nuts. I'm definitely going to get at least three more today.
No, we'll probably get that. We're going to lift. Today is Saturday, so we're going to lift in a couple hours. But we're meeting up with a friend of mine, Robert Palka, who I've met up with the last few times I've been here, who's South African, speaks a little bit of the language here. And that's our theme. Like, every time I've seen him, we've gotten crepes just because, like, we got them once. I'm like,
yes.
Holy shit. And, like... The problem is last night we went to a place that had the crepes already pre-cooked, at least like the pancake portion of it. So the good places are the ones that they make it like right in front of you, and they like you get it like a warm one, which is a little bit better. But damn, right now like we haven't eaten since last night, and to be honest, Roger ate a little bit more than me yesterday. So I'm kind of like thinking about this. I'm like, I'm hungry.
You need to make up for yesterday.
Yeah,
so I've been eating for. I think I put on at least 12 pounds since. Since I came to Australia, that's the ridiculous thing about travel. I could easily just not eat, but you know what? You just gotta ball out of control a little bit every now and then. Eat all the food I ate. Oh, I'm not even gonna talk about it. It was ridiculous.
Oh, I think we can. We're gonna get some. Like I said, Roger and I are kind of in the same mindset of like fasting until lunchtime. And
crush it.
Yeah, that's what we're gonna do. We're gonna lift at like 12:30, so we're not gonna eat until probably 2:30 or something like that. So we'll get something to eat around 2:30 and then just go balls to the walls with
I'm curling in all the racks. That's what I do. Curled in three racks in Australia. I'm curling at least one here. I may even squat. Probably not. I'm just going to do a ton of volume, just get super pumped, and go out with huge arms in Japan.
Yeah, one thing, you don't want to squat after. Like, Roger's a little bit better off, but... After sitting on a 14-hour flight and then walking all day yesterday, I'm going to do some lower body stuff, but it's going to be mostly just upper body pumpage. And I did, like, on Wednesday morning before coming out here, I did 120-something chin-ups. So it's been a couple days. I've had, like, 72 hours to recover.
It was you know, speaking about being on an airplane forever. So I had the emergency exit seat. On my last flight, which I'm always paranoid about because I'm always thinking I'm going to have to do some, like, heroic shit. So I fell asleep. And then I guess they came around with the lunch or whatever, breakfast or whatever, and I was asleep. And then she, like, shook me violently, like, for real. Like, I don't know why she didn't just let me sleep. She was like, you want breakfast? And I woke up like I had to do some shit. Like, I thought I was going to have to open that door. So I woke up, and I think I scared her because I was so excited. I was like, what? I was ready. I was ready. I watched the thing, watched the video. I know what to do, but I'm glad I didn't have to open the door up. So I just want people to know that I'm ready to be a hero at any time. Drop of the hat, dime, whatever you're dropping. I'm ready to be a hero.
So you did Romanella superhero workout? You're prepped?
I did the zombie apocalypse survival workout.
That's true. So
that's right.
Yeah, the cool thing, my flight out here, they grounded the Dreamliner. So normally my direct flight from Boston to Tokyo would be a Dreamliner, but they catch fire now. So we jumped on this old 777, and I posted pictures like on Facebook and Twitter, but the whole back third of the plane was completely empty. I don't, like, literally a whole section of probably 60 seats between six people. So like I had my own row, but still I did not sleep one wink on the flight. And then,
you could have skateboarded on that plane.
Stayed up late, but I've been pretty good for jet lag. Like got up at 4 a.m, went to bed at 10 last night. And,
I went to bed at
like nine
and woke up at seven.
So you got about 10 hours.
I'm ready. Ready to hit the day.
So yeah, that's it. We're going to be, getting in a lift. We're going to leave in a little bit, meet up with Robert and, go walk around for a little bit before lifting, and then going to spend the afternoon in Shibuya, which is super cool to hang out with, awesome shopping, super good food. Yeah, damn, we're going to eat. Like, I think when I went in November and I put on, like, again, like 6 or 7 pounds, like, in 7 days while I was here, which is pretty delicious. Ballsy. They'll probably do 4 more since I'm here for 4 days, and deal with the repercussions when I get back, and just make sure, again, we're going to lift today and maybe tomorrow to be honest, I don't think we're going to be able to lift tomorrow. So we have one band and two Val slides.
Let's just break our bodies today.
No, to be honest, if we do like partner band stuff, it's going to look really bad. Like
in this small, yeah, these rooms are small.
Our hotel room literally has enough room for 2 twin beds and a bathroom.
And there's stains on the floor, questionable stains. So
yeah, but we're paying like 150 something bucks a night for a double, so it's pretty good.
Man, that wraps it up. We need to get our swole on.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Shout out to the local Family Mart for hooking me up with green tea, and Go-Go Curry, our sponsor for this week.
Which is a gorilla. It has a gorilla for the logo. It's badass.
And there's the song that I never get out of my head, Go-Go Curry, Go-Go Curry, Go-Go Curry. It's really bad.
Is that what plays in the?
Yeah, no. They just loop this like 3-minute video. It just loops all day. I'd literally kill myself if I worked there. But it's the shit. I really want to get that stuff again.
No, don't do it.
Maybe tonight on the way back or something like that. We'll stop at the Shinjuku location, and you can just sit and watch me eat.
Are you gonna get the large or?
No, I'll probably get like the medium one again. All right, the extra rice doesn't do anything for me.
That's it.
Spicy curry. All right. Thanks for joining us. We might do one more tomorrow.
We'll see.
We'll post this up.
Right now.
Actually, yeah, I can throw it up right now before we leave. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Again, this is not the FitCast. This is a FitCast supplement. Hopefully, this is supplementing your podcasting listening to, and you got some insight on Tokyo. We'll talk a little bit more about training maybe tomorrow. Since we're going to train today, we'll talk about what we did in the gym. Basically, 2 hours of balls to the walls, repage.
We're doing 2 hours?
Well, like an hour and a half.
Okay, well, yeah.
We're basically just no rest periods, just full body.
So I'm going to die. All right, nice. This is good. Yeah, we can talk about training while traveling or whatever. Oh, okay, an hour and a half. Yep. Can we do hip thrusts in Japan, or is that illegal?
Why don't we just deadlift?
I'd rather hip thrust all day.
Sure, we'll talk to our good friend Sam, who's letting us jump in his gym real quick. Again, best thing about the FitCast is knowing, and same thing I was talking to Roger about, best thing about the internet is knowing people with gyms and couches to sleep on all over the world.
Yes.
All right, so thanks for listening, everyone. We will hopefully be back tomorrow with one more of these. And again, don't expect fitness stuff. Well, probably more Tokyo stuff, but hopefully you enjoy listening either way.